ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓமக்யானதிமிரந்தஸ்யா ஜனஞ்சான சலக்கயா சக்ஷுருமிலிதம் யேன தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீகுரவே நமஹ. நம ஓம் விஷ்ணுபதாய கிருஷ்ணப்ரஸ்தாய பூத்தலே ஸ்ரீமதே பக்தி வேதாந்த சுவாமினிதி நமினே. நமஸ்தே சரஸ்வதி தேவே கௌரவாணி பிரச்சாரிணே நிர்விசேஷூன்யவாதி பஷ்சத்யாதேசதாரிணே. ஜாய ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ண சைதன்ய பிரபு நித்யானந்த ஸ்ரீ அத்வைத்த கதாதர் ஸ்ரீ வாசதி கௌர பக்தவிருந்த. ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா கிருஷ்ண கிருஷ்ணா ஹரே ஹரே, ஹரே ராம ஹரே ராம 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 ஹரே ஹரே. வெல்கம் டு டுடேஸ் டாபிக்கல் கிளாஸ் ஆன் தி டாபிக் தி பிளேஸ் ஆஃப் ரெனன்சியேஷன் இன் டிவோஷனல் லைஃப். Someone asked 2 weeks ago, I forgot if it was a student or a community member, someone asked for this topic. There was a list of topics. Anyone asked for that? Can somebody say? You asked for it? Okay, good. I selected, it was the last on the list, but I selected it the first because these days we're having a series of lectures on Vaishnava Sannyas and modernity, and it ties in very well with the discussion. How I intend to approach the subject will be in a semi-interactive way. I will be presenting some things and then taking from you like that. So, what was your idea when you put this topic, the place of renunciation in devotional life? You were thinking it's very good, we should be renounced. Are you thinking we should not be artificially renounced? Are you thinking we shouldn't be renounced because bhakti is beyond renunciation? What were you thinking? What you had in mind? Okay, so you studied renunciation in Hinduism and you wanted to know how does it apply to Vaishnavism and particularly to Krishna Bhaktas following the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Okay? Yes. So let's look at that. Because actually in our movement, we are just at the moment in this analysis, Vaishnava Sannyasis in modernity. At the moment we are discussing, yesterday we finished with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur establishing sannyas in Gaudiya Math, and how our Srila Prabhupada took sannyas in 1959 in order to preach Krishna consciousness. And we are about to discuss the evolution of the sannyas ashram in ISKCON. And it is very relevant, the place of renunciation, certainly we have historical evidence that it has been misunderstood in ISKCON. If not many times, at least sometimes, and not in small ways, to the point that has created havoc within the society sometimes. And I will substantiate that in what ways. I'm sure some of you, those of you who are well acquainted with the history of ISKCON, will say, yes, I can think of that. There are different situations, personal experiences that one had, or general experiences. So before going into that, let's examine, we're talking, the goal here is not renunciation per se, but the goal is bhakti. The goal is devotional service, or as you put it, devotional life. The place of renunciation in devotional life. So what is the definition? Let's examine first. What is the definition of bhakti? Look at the bhakti shastras, those of you who did the bhakti shastri, or if you didn't do the bhakti shastri and you know the bhakti shastras, what is the essential definition of bhakti? There may be more than one, it's not, but there is one from one of the bhakti shastri books. From Rupa Goswami's, what is the definition of? Okay, very good. It's in the beginning, correct? Yes, please say it loudly. Shunyam yena karmadhyana vritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti ruttama. What is the translation of the verse? That's the definition of uttama bhakti. Uttama bhakti means pure devotional service, pure bhakti, the best type of bhakti, unmixed bhakti. So what is the definition, the translation of this verse? Even if not literal, what's the content, what's there, what's the meaning? Good. So it's the cultivation of favorable service to Krishna, and that service should not be covered by any other desire. Anya vilashita, no other motivation. And should be uncovered, not covered by jnana, karma, adi. Adi means yoga, may mean also asceticism, could be the case. Could be that asceticism in some cases covers bhakti. So on that basis, if asceticism covers bhakti, it is rejected. If asceticism favors bhakti, then it is accepted. It is part of devotional life. And actually we find in Srila Prabhupada's books many, many places where renunciation for the sake of devotional service is emphasized throughout the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. It is named Nivritta Marga. Nivritta Marga means the path of eliminating material attachment, and that's renunciation, becoming detached from the material world. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been described as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who came to teach bhakti yoga, which includes vidya, knowledge, and vairagya, renunciation. Vairagya vidya nicha bhakti yoga shikshartam eka purusha purana. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari Kripam Budhir Yastam Aham Prapadye. The ocean of mercy, Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has come to teach bhakti yoga with knowledge and detachment. So we have many such quotes in Shastra which indicate that renunciation is important in devotional service. Isn't it? Seems to be. But yet, sometimes we have also places where renunciation is de-emphasized. For example, in the 11th canto, in the Uddhava Gita, there are two different parts at least where renunciation is considered not sufficient to approach Krishna. Nasada yati mam yogo nasankyam dharma Uddhava nasvadhyayas tapastyago yatta bhaktin mamorjita. The Lord tells Uddhava, my dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service rendered to me by my devotees brings me under their control. I cannot be thus controlled by those engaged in mystic yoga, Sankhya philosophy, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation. So the Lord cannot be controlled by renunciation. If we think the more fasting we do, the more we attract Krishna, Krishna is not very impressed. Krishna likes to eat in Vrindavan. He eats tons of prasadam, and his devotees in Vrindavan, they eat prasadam with him. And if a devotee fasts, he may not feel so good about it. From his point of view, he's not very impressed by fasting. If the fasting is performed, a devotee forgets eating because he's singing his holy name, the Lord may feel attracted by that. Not because he's fasting, and he will be worried why he's fasting. I will bring him milk, like he did with Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri Goswami, Lord Chaitanya's spiritual grandfather, was fasting, but not because he was into fasting for the sake of attracting Krishna by fasting, but he was forgetting, he was absorbing, remembering Krishna, singing his glories. And then Krishna, he came and brought him milk. And he didn't recognize Krishna when he came as a cowher boy. Later on, he realized it was Krishna who had come. He thought it was a beautiful boy who brought him the milk, because the women from the village saw him and told him, bring him some milk. So Krishna is impressed about devotion, not about renunciation. And I will read a section from Nectar of Devotion, chapter 14. It is entitled, the chapter, Devotional Qualifications. Srila Prabhupada writes, some scholars recommend that knowledge and renunciation are important factors for elevating oneself to devotional life. Sorry, to devotional service. But actually, that is not a fact. That is not a fact, Prabhupada says. Knowledge and renunciation are not that important as we sometimes think. In our conditioned state, we consider them very important. Now Srila Prabhupada will explain what he means by that. Actually, the cultivation of knowledge or renunciation, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness, may be accepted in the beginning, but ultimately they may also come to be rejected. That doesn't mean that one takes sannyas and then gets married. This is not what it's saying here. But it's the inner meaning of the topic. We shouldn't do things upside down sometimes. But it's the point, it's the understanding, the realization. In the beginning, they will be like crutches. We use them in order to, like we have, what did Srila Prabhupada give? The four regulative principles. This is a type of renunciation. These are crutches, because he knew otherwise these people will behave in ways so animalistic that they will not be able to behave as devotees. So give them these crutches so that they will be able to walk. But then, in due course of time, the four regs become second nature for a devotee. It's natural to follow them. It's normal behavior. There is no need to do those things because they are not pleasing to Krishna. And they made me forget Krishna. And last night, Rasamandala Prabhu gave the example of the Srila Prabhupada's onion lila, that when onion or garlic, whatever it is, like the, in one occasion, Srila Prabhupada was in the house of a life member, and the one disciple told Srila Prabhupada, here, Prabhupada, there are onions or garlic in the food. And Prabhupada said, there is not onion. It was onion or was garlic? It was onion. There is no onion. And the disciple insisted, Prabhupada, yes, there is onion. And Prabhupada finally had to cut him. If I say there is no onion, there is no onion. So for a higher principle, he was preaching Krishna consciousness. In that particular instance, he was not so concerned about that, which normally you could say, Prabhupada talks onion, is almost, it's not meat, but it's coming close to meat. If you take some Puranic stories of where the onion is coming from, it's really heavy. So at least I didn't do a research on the onion, but I have here some stories connected to the cow and but Srila Prabhupada, he considered in that particular case, he was preaching Krishna consciousness, he was giving Krishna to that person, and that was not the priority at the time. So that renunciation for the sake of Krishna, for a higher principle, could be particularly renounced in that Kala Desha Patra, in that situation, for the benefit of the souls who were present there and who were going to receive Krishna from him. He didn't want to spoil that for some rule. We are very renounced. Like the story of that sage who didn't want to tell a lie. He made the vow not to tell a lie. And he didn't tell a lie so much so that when the band of dacoits came chasing good people to steal from them, and they were armed with weapons, they reached the hermitage of the sage, which was located at the crossroads. So the people, the good people, were running through to the left side, and the dacoits came running after them. They didn't see to which side they went. The sage was there outside. He was doing some austerity, some reading, japa, whatever he was doing outside. And they asked him, where did they go? And he was very, very dharmic. He didn't want to tell a lie. So he said, they went to the left. And because of that, he had to visit hell. He had to go to hell. Because he didn't use his discrimination about what was appropriate or inappropriate in that particular situation. Sometimes we may become so much self-righteous, so renounced, that we will not do a mistake. Sometimes the joke is made, the Mataji is drowning, and the renounced Brahmachari or Sannyasi, there is nobody else to take her, and she will drown, but he will maintain his vows of not touching a woman in his life. So we should use the sense of discrimination and when it's appropriate, when it's inappropriate. She burned? She died? Yeah, you see? This is. So, the Bhagavatam says, in emergency situations, we don't consider so much the, what are the rules. I remember there was one in New Brajamandala in the early days of the project. This was late 70s, early 80s. So Maka Maharaj was in charge of the project. He was the sannyasi preaching there. And then in the ashram, there was fire in a room, and fire was extending to other areas of the building. And then when the devotee took, he went to the room of the Maharaj, was next door, took the mattress to stop the fire, and then three devotees came, no, no, this is Maharaja's mattress. So the Maharaj mattress will be safe, but Krishna's building will be burned to ashes. So sometimes, I mean, this may be extreme examples, if you like, but this thing happened. Many times we don't properly understand dharma or renunciation. Shri Shri Radha Gopinatha Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada continues. So may be accepted in the beginning, knowledge and renunciation, but ultimately they may also come to be rejected, for devotional service is dependent on nothing other than the sentiment or desire for such service. It requires nothing more than sincerity. This shouldn't be misunderstood either. If we go to the other extreme, then, okay, we don't study Srila Prabhupada's books, we don't study Shastra, and then we start doing only what it feels. I don't know what Krishna wants, but because it feels I'm going to do this for Krishna, I will do it. I'm not initiated, but Krishna is calling me into the altar, I will go and will do anything. We'll offer to Krishna whatever I feel I should offer. So it is not whimsical either. There should be a balance and should be based on scripture, on Shastra. It is the opinion of expert devotees that mental speculation and the artificial austerities of yoga practice may be favorable for becoming liberated from material contamination, but they will also make one's heart harder and harder. So renunciation, which is not doesn't develop simultaneously, proportionately to bhakti, to devotion, makes the heart harder. It becomes dry, artificial. They will not help at all in the progress of devotional service. These processes are therefore not favorable for entering into the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Actually, Krishna consciousness, devotional service itself, is the only way of advancing in devotional life. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that actually bhakti comes from bhakti. There is nothing else can cause bhakti. Karma cannot cause bhakti, jnana cannot cause bhakti, vairagya cannot cause bhakti. Only a bhakta, a devotee of the Lord, can give bhakti. And that's independent of the other aspects. The other aspects are naturally included, they are byproducts of bhakti, but are not the cause of bhakti. So Srila Prabhupada says, devotional service itself is the only way of advancing in devotional life. Devotional service is absolute. It is both the cause and the effect. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause and effect of all that be. And to approach Him, the Absolute, the process of devotional service, which is also absolute, has to be adopted. The process of devotional service implies sadhana, regular practice. Like Rupa Goswami explains, Uttama Bhakti is of three types, Trivida Bhakti, sadhana, bhava, and prema. Sadhana means practice. It means in the conditioned state, our identity is covered by a false identity. The identity of the material body, mind, and senses. Therefore, it will be unreal and natural to really serve Krishna as a Baba Bhakta. It's not possible. A Baba Bhakta serves Krishna from the platform of Shuddha Bhakti, pure goodness. So the sadhaka serves Krishna by engaging the senses in the service of Krishna under the guidance of a Premi Bhakta, a pure devotee of Krishna. And this is the process to enter to, and be, like for example, we, most of us are sadhakas. We are practicing, we are serving Krishna in our present conditioned state. Conditioned in the sense that still we are in the process of purification. In one sense, by being engaged in, engaged in devotional service, Srila Prabhupada explains in Nectar of Devotion, we're already liberated because we already started the process. The mercy of the pure devotee of Krishna, the mercy of Krishna, has been given to us. If we have accepted it, if we are applying it, really applying it, sincerely, as Prabhupada says here, then that's devotional life. And it is just a matter of time, like the metaphor given by Prabhupada of the green mango and the ripened mango. The green mango is also a mango and shouldn't be undermined. In due course of time, will become ripened. So, okay, let's now go into the history of ISKCON Sannyas. Of course, renunciation is not limited to the Sannyas ashram, but there is a history on it, and I would like to look a little bit on it and reflect on things that happened in ISKCON due to misunderstanding of renunciation. Can any of you think of some historical events which were crucial, we could say, in the history of ISKCON, in the development, in this regard, in regard to this topic? It's coming close to that, yes. There was a proposal made to Srila Prabhupada by one of the leading sannyasis. He's a saint, but at that time he made that proposal. I mean, he did so much service for Srila Prabhupada. But in that time, that's part of the history of in Lilamrita, he proposed to Srila Prabhupada, and there was a, it was not, there was a culture that sannyasis and brahmacharis were the best devotees. Grihasthas were low class. Even Srila Prabhupada in the Gaudiya Math, he explained about himself, his god brothers, they used to, in some occasion, but the culture was there, Kacha Grihastha. You know, Kacha, the meaning of Kacha, is the contrary to Pakka. You know, Pakka? Pakka means first class. Pakka. In India they say Pakka. It's Pakka. Kacha. What's Kacha? Not. Kacha means rotten. It's like rotten. It's a very derogatory term. So Prabhupada, this is in Harishauri Prabhu's book, in one of the conversations he said that they said they consider Grihastha Kacha Grihastha. But this is actually Vaishnava Parada. How you can consider a Vaishnava householder, rotten? How is it possible? That's offensive mentality. That has nothing to do with renunciation, what to speak of devotional life. So the proposal was women, children, and those who are attached to women and children get out of the temples. Get out of the temples. That was the mood. And there was a big controversy, such a big controversy. This was 1970, I think it was 76, 75 or 76. The proposal came all the way up to the GBC body, and luckily, Srila Prabhupada was still present on the planet, physically present, and he stopped it. Although the GBC body didn't agree, it's true that finally, but there was a big debate, so he presented the topic to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, he rejected, he said no. And then that disciple, actually, he felt repentant. When he realized the mistake, he went to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, I'm sorry, Srila Prabhupada, I created so much disturbance. Maybe I should go to China to preach. And then Srila Prabhupada, not long after, he took the word of his disciple. He thought it was a great idea. This was the best. Prabhupada was so expert in using, even if his disciple will make a mistake, he will use that mistake to give Krishna consciousness to others and to uplift the disciple. So he sent him to preach to China. And due to his preaching, so many Chinese devotees were made. And all Krishna consciousness, even though it is prohibited in China, is spreading. It's very much present in mainland China. Certainly, yes. These will be immature motivations for taking sannyas. There was a culture that if you want to climb the ladder in ISKCON, you have to take sannyas. Even we have the case, even devotees, when the Sonal Acharya period started, the 11 first initiating gurus after Prabhupada, there were two of them who were grihasthas, and they were giving initiation. But they thought they had to take sannyas in order to be at the same level than the other gurus, which was a misconception. Their ashram was not sannyas ashram, but they push it prematurely. If you cut the nails prematurely, what happens? It bleeds. If the nails are short, let them grow, then you cut them. But if you cut them prematurely, then there is bleeding. So this is exactly what happened. So Grihastha Vaishnava, actually, traditionally, if we look at the Bhagavatam, the Diksha Guru, generally, according to the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, was Grihastha. The renouncers were Shiksha Gurus. That's not to say they were not giving Diksha, but not so much importance is given to the Diksha in terms of the ceremony and the name, and we see Narada Muni instructing so many personalities. I don't think he was initiating each and every one of them. Your name is Maharaj Yudhishthira. Your name is everyone he was meeting. He was giving Shiksha. But the Bhagavatam speaks about the wife of the spiritual master. The Brahmachari, if the wife of the spiritual master is young, the brahmachari, the young boy, who is a brahmachari, normally was a young boy, shouldn't allow her to caress him like a mother. It's not appropriate for, especially a boy who is growing. Maybe when he's a small boy, that will be natural, but then as the boy grows, that will not be the case. So, misconceptions were there. Many Grihastha gurus in Chaitanya Charitamrita we find, who had disciples. They were initiating disciples in the presence of Sriman Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there were many misunderstandings that took place, and maybe we still have a few of them. Could be the case. We have to evaluate. I don't say we may have, we may not, but we have to evaluate what is our understanding of Krishna consciousness? What is our understanding of renunciation in relation to devotional life? That's not to say that the monks who take vows, lifelong vows, shouldn't be honored by that. That's the tradition and that's appropriate. That should be done. That's there. That's part of the Parnashram's system. But if that brings us to commit offenses to other Vaishnavas, what's the point? Let's look a little bit into the history. Prabhupada gave the first sannyas initiation in 1967, 1 year after founding ISKCON, to Kirtanananda Swami. So you can imagine, 1 year after you join, you are given sannyas. Just it's for to compare, but it's very, very early. And actually there were problems soon after. There was a case, it's in the letters, that he started to preach a kind of impersonal philosophy, and he had to, the other disciples had to stop him. But then, Prabhupada corrected him, rectified him, and engaged him in service in developing New Vrindavan. And we have New Vrindavan because they did that seva. There were mistakes, but there was also a lot of sincere seva that was offered to Srila Prabhupada, and that's there. So Srila Prabhupada gave 54 sannyas initiations in 10, 11 years. And he did it to preach Krishna consciousness. As His Holiness Gaur Govinda Maharaj will say, he was giving opportunity. He was giving opportunity to do something for Krishna, to spread Krishna consciousness. That was the idea. You sacrifice your life to give Krishna to other people. And for that, you become a monk if you like. He offered it, and some devotees took it. Okay, then, what happened historically? It is evident from the biographical works written by Prabhupada's disciples that his sannyasis contributed largely to ISKCON's expansion, but not only the sannyasis. In Europe, those who opened were three Grihastha couples in the UK. So it was not exclusive of the sannyasis, but certainly the sannyasis were key players in spreading Krishna consciousness. Opening temples around the world, making many new devotees, publishing and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and pushing book distribution in different parts of the world, like the Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan buses in America. They made so many devotees, so many books were distributed. Organizing festivals, public chanting, big Ratha Yatras, establishing holy places in India, like in Mayapur was established by Jayapataka Maharaj, Bhavananda Prabhu. They were sannyasis who were pushing the movement, establishing ISKCON. Akshayananda Maharaj in Vrindavan, Prabhupada put sannyasis in charge of the main temples to ensure that they will be respected and there will be order and things will work properly. Developing farm communities, New Vrindavan, etc. And supervising ISKCON's management. Prabhupada engaged also expert managers, for example, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very expert in management, and he engaged him in India, which was a very difficult place to manage and needed someone strong to do it. And he had the character, the charisma to do it and to push things. And then this is a quote by an ex-sannyasi, Jaimini. This is a fictional name, so you don't know who is he, who is speaking. It's part of the deal with them, so they could speak freely. Jaimini, an ISKCON ex-sannyasi, says, "Even though we were all young, he took advantage of our energy and enthusiasm to get the movement started in many places. I'm sure Prabhupada was aware that many of the men that he was giving sannyas to will not last as sannyasis. At the same time, whatever sacrifices they did, they were going to get the benefit, no doubt. And another consideration is that, out of many, some of them will become successful. It was a small percent, but some will make it, so Prabhupada knew it. It was a calculated risk." So that's his estimation. It was calculated. So certainly, Prabhupada's calculated risk produced positive results. Also, what happened as the influence and power of sannyasis increased, there was that conflict that we discussed briefly before. And then there is a submarine. This is just a part of Burg Rockford, who has been, he's a sociologist who has been studying ISKCON for more than 30 years, especially in America, but also in other places. And the last book he published is entitled Hare Krishna Transformed. And he interviewed many different devotees, so he didn't make this up. From the interviews to different devotees, this is what he writes. These are excerpts. "Women's lives changed as the political power of renunciate sannyasis grew organizationally. In the early and mid 1970s. Thereafter, devotee women were no longer viewed as partners in a spiritual renaissance. Rather, they were categorized as personifications of the illusory energy Maya Devi, who threatened to cause men to deviate from their noble spiritual quest. A genuine desire..." Does this sound familiar to some of you, especially the most? Yes, the senior Vaishnavis, you had experience of that in your own flesh. You will say that was, you were Maya, you couldn't stand anywhere, you couldn't dance, you couldn't sing, you couldn't do anything, hide in the corner. You couldn't laugh. Of course, there is etiquette, there is culture, about behavior, but in those days it was, Vaishnavis were very much offended. If you are welcome, if you like, to share any experiences. Of course, we don't want not, could be, you, I'm sure you will have to, you will have many things to say about that, so you could share that in. But if you want to share an experience to give a point, you're welcome to do it. Something that happened here in Belgium, in Radadish, you don't have to say names, but you can say here in this very same place. I continue reading. Thereafter, okay. "A genuine desire for transcendence," so it's not that there was not genuine desire for service, for transcendence. "A genuine desire for transcendence often commingled with an urge to acquire prestige, position, and power within ISKCON, propelled most of these young men into rash and improvident heroics. This is Rabindra Swarup Prabhu speaking. It's a quote, a part of him, quoted by Roquefort. The one of the parts, because there are different phrases by different devotees. Some are Vaishnavis, some are different senior ISKCON members, male members. The persistence of desires they could neither acknowledge nor control began to erupt as intolerance and fanaticism. The social climate turned ugly. And then this thing came. Women out, grihastas out, children out of the temples. And Prabhupada said, no, they belong. All my disciples belong. And it doesn't depend on the particular ashram. Let us see what else is there. And then, of course, this period, this started to happen in the mid-70s. It started to happen. But short after, Srila Prabhupada left physically in his Bapu form, left this world. So naturally, that culture was still there, very strong. And with the Sonal Acharya days, it continued. It extended up to the end of the 80s at least. Is that, what do you think? That period, end of the 80s, early 90s, in some places extended longer. That's not to say that may not happen in some places, but that culture was there. And there was sometimes misuse. Vaishnava Parat committed on the name of renunciation, like that, like external renunciation. And then, of course, this ties in with another situation. It was the inheritance of Srila Prabhupada's mantle. Who will be the successors? Srila Prabhupada's legacy. And that has been a real challenge. Some qualified Vaishnavas were not allowed to initiate when they were ready as others who were ready at the time. So some of them left ISKCON and then was very late to bring them back. Because they already went too far, so it was difficult then to bring them back. It was too late. Four different considerations, institutional considerations, and overemphasis was given. Sometimes grihastas can have been regularly, systematically disempowered by a system of overemphasizing external renunciation. So, of course, again, Daivavarnashram should be there, sannyasis should be properly honored as such, as sannyasis. There are many instructions in Shastra, but all Vaishnavas should be honored. And mature grihastas should be empowered to preach Krishna consciousness and to spread the message of Krishna consciousness in their places. This is what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told the Brahmana Kurma. He wanted to take sannyas and go with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told one of the verses most quoted by Srila Prabhupada about guru. You become guru. Anyone can remember that verse? It's very famous, so some of you may remember it. That's also very famous, but it's not exactly. That's a good verse, but not the one. It's a Bengali verse. Yes? What else? Yare de katare kahe Krishna upadesh, And the last line, on my order become guru. Amara agyaya guru hanya taraidesh. Go back to your place. Whoever you meet, talk about Krishna. Instruct them about Krishna. Give them Krishna Shiksha. In this way you become guru and liberate everyone in your place. Srila Prabhupada was empowering. He sent his Grihastha devotees, new devotees, to open Europe. He didn't care. They were sannyasi Grihastha, he empowered everybody. But of course he knew Grihasthas with children, it's difficult to travel to preach. Therefore he established a class of sannyasis who will be able to dedicate full time, 100% time, to preaching. That was the idea. So, then, I will read one section. This is from Larry Sheen, another scholar who very friendly. He came to Spain in the 80s for a debate. Spain was very much attacked by the anti-colonial movement, very heavily on TV, and he came to defend his country, very, like a scholar, very good. And he wrote about what happened after the challenges ISKCON had to face, and I will say we may be still facing some of these challenges. That's for you. You can examine to what extent that's true or not, but maybe some cases. I do think some of the challenges are still there. Prabhupada's instructions over the last months of his life gave slightly conflicting notions of how he intended his authority to be transferred and institutionalized so that his mission will be carried on in his absence. Prabhupada had several months previous to his death named 11 senior disciples to be initiation acharyas. Quote, this is how he quotes it. I don't know where he got it, but he probably from interviews to devotees. And thereby to stand in the disciplic line of Chaitanya. Prabhupada had also said that any of his disciples could become a guru if they perfected their Krishna devotion. There are letters where Prabhupada wanted all his disciples in 1975, they will be allowed to initiate disciples in order to extend the generations of Bhakti Vedantas. He didn't want to be the only Bhakti Vedanta. He wanted many Bhakti Vedantas, all his disciples, many gurus, because there are needed many gurus in the world to spread Krishna consciousness. As early as 1970, Prabhupada created a governing body commission, GBC, which now consists of 24 senior devotees, all personally selected by Prabhupada to supervise ISKCON's missionary activities in various zones around the world. The fact that the will of Prabhupada is to be found in his teachings on the Krishna scriptures complicated matters even more. If I depart, there is no cause for lamentation. I will always be with you through my books and my orders. This is a quote Prabhupada is speaking. In other words, the guru lives on in his teachings even after his body is gone. But who is to be the final authority in interpreting the founder's teachings and their intentions? Who are the real inheritors of Prabhupada's mantle? The new gurus? The GBC? All the disciples of Prabhupada who have the capacity to be gurus? No easy answers emerge in the years following Prabhupada's demise. Thus, we are presented with a classical instance of the problems associated with the transfer of religious authority. This is a social scientist analysis, but it's very true, it's there. Now we have parallel lines of authority, committee. So, how many lines of authority did Srila Prabhupada lead in ISKCON? 3. Okay. Which are those? Sannyasis. Well, temple president and GBC will be the same line because the temple president is accountable to the GBC. So, anyway, I don't want enter. This will be entered into the application of the Guru Tattva principle in a preaching mission, globalized preaching mission around the world, ruled by a GBC established by the founder Acharya. So it's not peanuts, it's something serious, and the GBC are still discussing how to do the best, how to find the best solution. And we don't want to go too much there, but the reason why I'm bringing this up is because of the issue of empowerment or disempowerment of those who are not officially monks, officially renouncers, sannyasis. So this is something, for me, it's food for thought to consider. And we can open discussion. We don't have the time to stop, but we can take, I guess, 5 minutes for discussion before going for breakfast. Yeah, good. Good, thank you. That's it's a good point, very good point. Going after the war was over, so. I mean initiating guru, giving diksha. Yes, I don't know. I'm not sure. Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu is not here. He could tell us what's the official stance of the GBC. I know there have been a debate, and I believe officially there is authorization for women to initiate, but in practice it's not. One case that was being promoted was blocked for whatever reasons. I don't say good or bad reasons, but it was blocked. But if you go to India, for example, in India there is only, I don't know, within the last 2 years, up to 2009-2010, when I did the research, I finished recently, but when I did the interviews and so on, in India there is only one Grihastha initiating guru. All the other initiating gurus are sannyasis. So it has to be with the sociocultural context, which you could also question, because in India many people will accept women gurus. There are many women gurus from many other groups, and they have a big follow-up. So it's not that they will not attract. And Srila Prabhupada asked Yamuna Devi to preach in Mumbai in the Pandal, to speak to the people. He make her sing publicly. So Srila Prabhupada, in terms of how he engaged his Western female disciples in India, he was very outgoing. In different occasions, there are historical evidence about that. So yes, that's there, but even it's not just women, it's also Grihastha men, I will say. Not many, though. Eh? I can tell you the statistics. Let me see. Statistics coming from His Holiness Paradananda Maharaj, who supervises the Guru Committee. Because there were more Grihastha men who were initiating, but somehow they didn't continue so much. I don't say that, I mean, the system, the formula, it's up to the GBC to decide how they want to do it. Depends what they decide, they'll join or don't join the topic, the initiation program. Let me see. By the end of 2009, there were 68 initiating gurus in ISKCON, from which 54 were sannyasis, 14 grihasthas. Okay, 68 initiating gurus, 14 grihasthas. Something, it's 20%. Yes. Piece of flesh. So Krishna had a plan to you, put you a big test, but because you went through it and gave the best.
Bhakti Devi and her two sons, and also his family.
Okay, good. So next Tuesday is the time to for a student to give the class. Do you want to give the class next Tuesday? It's, and you can elaborate on that story. No, I'm not joking. I'm serious. A student has to do it. You have to take a turn sometime. You know the story. You can research it a little bit. I mean, okay, you can think about it and let me know later. Next week, a student is meant to give the class Devotional Life and Renunciation. So, can be male or female students. We don't discriminate in that regard. So, okay. So you are on for next Tuesday. This evening, if you are interested, it's going to be the last session on the dissertation, discussing the 10 factors which emerge from the interviews to ISKCON devotees about why many sannyasis gave up sannyas, and by extension it applies why we may fall down from devotional life, which real renunciation comes from devotional life. So this is this evening at 7:30. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai.